Phone the comment line 1850 715 900.
Now, one thing Brian Dowling and I forgot to mention was the fact that he is presenter of Saturday with Brian Dowling. It's on this Saturday, the last run of the year, and it's going to be a special programme. I'm told, a bit like the banking inquiry, there's going to be all-party consensus. They're in rehearsal. I can't say any more, but it will be entertaining, I am told. I hope it's a bit better than the famous Vincent Brown 1 year ago when he had politicians in singing. Who will ever forget the Shannon's contribution of the late Tomás McGilla? God be good to him. Singing was not his strongest point. Ingrid Miley, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Fresh back from China, where, as we know, you were accompanying and covering President Higgins' visit. A mixture, I think, of, was it, would you say, cordial meetings with top political leaders and a chance to do some advocacy for closer economic and political relations?
Yes, it was a very broad-ranging trip. The way I, for my own clarity of thinking, broke it down was that you had cultural elements, trade elements and political elements. So I think that certainly from within 2 hours, excuse me, of landing, we were having a tour of the famous Forbidden City in Beijing. The following morning, the Great Wall. We saw a modern art gallery. We had a concert where Irish artists like Sharon Shannon and her band were playing with Chinese artists all together. And there was a fantastic cultural interaction there. But also underpinning this, the fact that President Higgins was going to be meeting the President of China, Xi Jinping, the Prime Minister, the head of the People's Congress, local politicians when we were away from actual Beijing, and that there was obviously trade, a desire to boost trade underpinning all of that.
Now, President Xi, I think when he was vice president, was in this country. I'm not sure, he presumably did meet President Higgins at the time. So was that something, it was a relationship that was, if you like, they were picking up where they left off the last time? How did they get on, in other words, Ingrid?
Well, the China watchers were saying to me that the body language was incredibly warm. Now, I gather that things are very, if you like, stern in China, in the sense that things tend to be quite protocol driven. So you really have to be a very attuned China watcher to read the runes, if you like. But certainly people were saying to me that there seemed to be a huge cordiality between the two sides. President Higgins described it as the continuation of a conversation that had commenced in Ireland. And certainly people were saying that they got the impression that there was a warmth there that might not have been with other delegations.
Before he headed away, Ingrid, there were reports in more than one newspaper suggesting that the Mandarins in Ivy House, who run the Department of Foreign Affairs, were concerned that he would somehow embarrass us or, if you like, maybe do some damage to Ireland's economic interests by spouting off about human rights. That's a very unkind way to put it, and probably vulgar as well. But nonetheless, reading Conor Brady in his column in the Sunday Times last week, he was talking about, effectively, he said that the President had engaged in meaningless babble by, if you like, having such a broad definition of human rights as to basically deal with the question of feeding the hungry.
Well,
what did happen, in other words?
Okay, well, the first thing to say is that there was a briefing for the media after the meeting with Xi Jinping, with the Irish media, President Higgins. And they said, you can ask any question you want. That's the first thing that should be made clear, that there was nothing being, we were not told that anything was off.
That would
the
be
agenda.
Typical of President Higgins,
I
think.
Absolutely. So I asked, you know, the issue of human rights, that's something that is has been a trademark of your own personal reputation, if you like. Was it raised? And he said, yes, it was. But what I got the impression of is that they broadened the definition of human rights to allow the Chinese to come to the table with face. As you know, it would be very easy in some ways to go in and say, we hate your death penalty. We hate your censorship. We hate, you know, other breaches. There's Hong Kong, there's Tibet. There are a lot of issues that globally people find objectionable in relation to China. But if we went in there and said all those things, what would it achieve? One senior Irish diplomat said to me, when you are doing something like this, you have to decide, what do you want to achieve? Now, leaving aside the fact that there is a potentially massive dividend in trade, in investment, leaving that aside entirely, do you achieve more by keeping people at the table and slowly, slowly moving to progress? Or do you achieve more by going in there, making your point, Which is a valid point. I mean, a lot of people...
But what was the point made? I suppose people might want to know. Was there a point made, for instance, about Hong Kong and the student protesters and others being cleared from the streets?
I'm not sure whether Hong Kong was raised, but certainly it was stated that the death penalty was raised and that President Higgins was making the point that he would defend his right to advocate on these issues, not just in China, but in other jurisdictions where he might have an issue with the death penalty, for example, America.
And... it's not as though we're talking about a place that doesn't have options in terms of the visitors received. I remember being with President McAleese over a dozen years ago, and while we were waiting for her to come out, a car swept by. One of them in the back seat had Rupert Murdoch. Another one had a separate car, obviously, the former US President George Bush Sr., George H. Bush. So it's there is a conveyor belt of these visits going on, and I suppose we have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, we're in relative terms a small nation.
We are absolute minnows, and we should bear that in mind. Having said that, Sean, considering we're minnows, look what was done during this visit. The Irish delegation, both the President, Michael Noonan, the Minister for Finance, Charlie Flanagan, the Minister, the Foreign Affairs Minister, and all of this delegation of trade missions. Remember, you had Enterprise Ireland, IDA Ireland, Science Foundation Ireland, you had Tourism Ireland, Board BIA, you had universities like your own alma mater.
NUI Galway, we call it now.
That's the one signing a memorandum of understanding. In my own patch, my own alma mater, Trinity, was also signing a memorandum of understanding. We had huge delegations trying to do business. But this minnow of a nation got access to the President of China, the Prime Minister of China, the President, the Chairman of the People's Congress, Huawei, the biggest ICT company in the world now, it has overtaken Ericsson, Alibaba, the company which has been described as China's answer to eBay, Amazon and PayPal rolled into one, the Chairman of Alibaba, Jack Ma, China's richest man, and the potential for trade links from all of that is massive. So were we punching above our weight? Am I falling into the danger of, spouting spin? I don't know. But it is a statement of fact that this minnow of a nation got one hell of a lot of access over the last
week. And I suppose it is something of a slow build. Again, mentioning my own alma mater, I know the President, Jim Brown, has been going to China since the 1980s, building contacts with the Tsinghua University, which actually has the President of China as one of its graduates. And eventually you get to sign an agreement in his presence. Trinity does something similar. Others do that kind of work as well.
Yes, I mean, a lot of it goes below the surface, and then that can have an impact for, you know, student exchanges and for research projects and all of that. So yes, all of this is happening below the radar and what have you. But clearly, I mean, if I can just take one example, Sean, tourism. This year, there were 100 million Chinese people made outbound tourism trips. There is a burgeoning middle class. They've all got money and they want to spend it abroad. Now, if we got 0.5% of that, that would be 500,000 extra visitors to Ireland. Now, a new visa scheme has been announced, which is called the visa waiver scheme. It means that previously a Chinese person wanting to come to Britain and Ireland needed two visas. An agreement has been reached that you only need one visa now, and that will allow them to travel from one to the other. If you market that, how many more tourists could you get coming here? They've done research on what tourists are looking for. They're looking for golf. They're looking for honeymoons. Huge trade in people wanting to go on honeymoons.
Is the Temple Bar not full enough?
Listen, they clearly don't have enough of that in Beijing. And they want self-drive, all of which we can offer. But if we can market that notion of the visa waiver, for example, what could that do to tourism here?
Now, you visited Alibaba, you mentioned that, Ingrid, owned by, is it China's richest man or
one of,
tell us about that.
That was extraordinary. Alibaba was set up and it basically allows even small farmers in China, small businesses, to market their goods online in a way that might have been more difficult for them with, you know, Western things, because it's in their own language, it's in their own culture and everything. And a number of governments have now done deals with Alibaba to market their their goods into China through Alibaba. But it's employing 33,000 people, 15,000 of them at the complex that we were visiting in Hangzhou, which is one of the more upmarket provinces of tourism. It's where Mao Zedong's favourite retreat was, where we were staying. But it was viewed as huge. that we got access. They set up a sort of an entertainment for the presidential delegation. There were Chinese-Irish dancers, and there was a bit of, Tai Chi and that sort of thing. And it was just, the hospitality was huge. Yes, no big job announcement or investment announcement came out of anything that
but
we
But it is, I suppose, a slow build. It does take time to make progress. There's a different culture, maybe. Now, I gather there was some Chinese connection with George Bernard Shaw.
There certainly was. I mean, this is through Sun Yat-sen, one of the leading politicians of the 20th century, who would have been as one of the first Republicans, if you like, of China. And in 1933, George Bernard Shaw, who's one of our own literary...
Tri-giant.
Yes, absolutely. He decided to go and visit the widow of Sun Yat-sen in Shanghai. And he said that he would only go if he could, you know, have access to that. And the president, we went to see the house, and we also went to see the Peace Hotel in Shanghai, which is an Art Deco hotel, which is where there is now a museum to a lot of that historical period, which is a bit like the Algonquin Hotel was in New York with the Dorothy Parker set, the literary set, the intelligentsia, whatever. But it was extraordinary to see that. And in Fudan University, which is the top university in Shanghai, they still have an essay writing competition, the George Bernard Shaw essay writing competition. And indeed, they even have his name in Chinese is Shao Bo Na, which I learned just to show how clever I am.
Now, one of the things that they can do is move pretty quickly. They don't have on board Panola or other agencies to stop them going ahead with projects like building a ring road and that kind of thing. And I gather that before there was a big summit attended by President Obama there in October, but they were able to guarantee blue skies in a notoriously smoggy capital by shutting down certain industrial output. Nothing I imagine like that laid on for Michael D. Higgins and his entourage. But what was it like there to live and move through Beijing?
Well, you may have noticed that I'm dying of a cold, and I would have to say that most of the delegation are. The first day we were there, the skies were blue, it was beautiful. And the day that we went to the Great Wall, again, beautiful. On the Tuesday, which was the day that we were going to be meeting Xi Jinping, my cameraman, Porik Tracy, was going up to Tiananmen Square to take pictures because when we were coming in from the airport, when we landed, all along the motorway, there were tricolours which had been put up. All along. And up in Tiananmen Square, there were tricolours all around the square. But Porik came back and he said, I could hardly see anything because the smog is so bad. We know they're there, but literally he had to go nearly up close to them to see. It catches in your throat. It is really, really hard to breathe. It was the first time I realised just how bad smog can be. Now, when I was back in the late 80s, I had a small house in Stony Batter, which was one of the worst areas for coal burning in Dublin. And, you know, I used to come home in the evenings and you could hardly see where you were going. But we dealt with that with the smokeless fuels. They have a long way to go in China.
And what's your sense of President Xi himself? I've read various analysts making the point that he is, I suppose, moving to place himself at the centre of China at a personal level in a way maybe not seen since the days of Mao.
Yes, indeed. Well, I mean, first off, he's married to a very famous singer and she is very popular. But I think that what he's doing is he's trying to walk a line. He does want to preserve the rising prosperity because, you know, people need that.
And the reports again, that could be faltering.
That is faltering. Growth is faltering. And I think that, you know, they're going to have to think very carefully about their economic strategy to deal with that. But I think that what he has made a crusade of is anti-corruption. We are seeing, you know, local officials who may have enriched themselves with some of the sort of activities that God knows are not limited to China. We've seen a few of them here and what have you. But he is cracking down on corruption. And I think that is something that is very welcome among Chinese people.
Did this visit by the leader of a very small nation to and his engagement with the leader of 1.3, the president of a country with 1.3 billion people, did it get much media attention over there?
Massive. Absolutely massive. I'll give you one funny story. We were in a motorcade for most of the trip, and that is fantastic. There was a Chinese, an Irish-based Chinese journalist there, Clifford Coonan, and he was on the bus in the motorway, and he was like a child in a sweet shop. I told him I was going to say this, because he said, "My God, the traffic's moving," because normally the traffic is completely at a standstill. So, because we weren't at the state banquet, so our bus peeled off and we went back in the normal traffic. But a bus pulled up beside us, and a standard Beijing bus as opposed to Dublin bus, and there was a television on the bus. And who are we looking out and seeing but Michael D. Higgins on the bus, because he got huge coverage on the main news bulletin. And also, it was the second most accessed story on the People's Daily website in the Chinese language. Now, that's tens of millions of people suddenly being exposed to Ireland in a way that they might not
have
been.
And finally, Ingrid, your monastic moment.
Oh, my God. Like, this was a trip where I got to see all of the things I'd always dreamt of seeing in China. And every time you thought something might be a bit boring, you'd go and then it would be really, really interesting. But they brought us to the Lingyin Monastery, which was the most haunting experience I've ever had. The monastery itself has all those old carved things, the altars and everything, which are amazing. And we were brought round by the head monk. But then the monks invited us to eat with them. And we sat at these refectory sort of bench tables, and the meal was in total silence. But before the meal, the monks chanted, and they chanted again at the end of the meal. And I swear to God, it was absolutely haunting, Sean. I mean, you actually felt something move in your heart with the sound of this rich, loud, emotional, and yet peaceful chanting. I think everybody was blown away by the monastery.
Ingrid, thanks for that. Just before you go, I just want to bring some of the texts that listeners have sent. Nice to see the socialist Michael D. Higgins in the biggest police state in the world with a begging bowl, says one listener. Trade before humanity, shame on the president, says another. And after two excellent... Sorry, I just wiped that one. Maybe we can have it restored. It was one of about three lines in length. Sean, time for President Higgins to walk the walk, read China's abysmal human rights record. Something things mean more than money, and Ireland grovelling for pennies. Embarrassing, says James. Well, I suppose you will always get, I was going to say begrudges, I've just said it, you'll always get critics on an issue like this, I suppose.
Well, do we raise Guantanamo Bay when we go to America? Do we raise, I think that is, the point that people are making. I'm not advocating this. I'm just saying these are the arguments that were made to me.
The other one has been restored after two excellent reforming female presidents in a time of economic crisis. We elected a man to be president with a track record of campaigning for the poor and the voiceless. Since then, he has returned the presidency to the traditional format of the silent, elderly, loyal party man sitting quietly in the arse. Now that is... It's hitting it fairly hard.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.